Good evening and welcome to a very special forum. Tonight's forum features Billy Bragg and his keynote speech given before the Folk Alliance International Conference on February 18th, 2017 at the Western Crown Center here in Kansas City, Missouri. Billy Bragg is a renowned political folk singer and one of those people that the Guthrie Estate allows to set some of Woody's unmelodied lyrics to music. This is going to be rather short, so we will finish out the hour with a bunch of tidbits that we otherwise would not get to share with you. But sit back and enjoy this. Now here's Billy Bragg.
Thank you very much, Angus. And thank you very much. I'd like to thank the Folk Alliance International for inviting me here. And this year's named beef burger honoree this close to Kansas, being named after something with beef in it is as good as a knighthood back home. So I ate one yesterday, and I don't think I'll need to eat anything for the rest of the week, which is great. It's great to be back in Kansas City. The last time I was here was such a long time ago that I was opening for a flock of seagulls. So, yeah. And everybody in this room had dark hair, and it was slicked up. But those times have changed. It's very timely that the Folk Alliance should call upon the issue of forbidden folk to be this year's theme, not just in your country, but in my country also, with the Brexit referendum, right across Europe. In the coming months, far-right anti-immigrant parties will be attempting to wrestle their way into liberal democracy. And it's a powerful thing. We were actually at Glastonbury Festival, which is kind of like this, but with mud. less beef burgers. And it was shocking. I mean, not only just for someone, I have run a stage there called The Left Field. I had some young political songwriters there who, you know, we literally woke up that morning and we left the European Union. The Prime Minister had resigned. And, I mean, these are kids who've, as songwriters, had never been through a transition of Prime Minister. He'd been Prime Minister since 2010. So, I mean, one of them, Will Varley, was in tears. He had six songs that mentioned David Cameron by name. And I told him not to worry because Boris Johnson also worked fine and he'll probably be Prime Minister by the end of the weekend. It didn't happen. Life comes at us fast, really fast. Who knows what 45 is going to say this afternoon down in Florida? Jesus Christ. Get your pens at the ready. But I wambled off to find myself a cup of coffee at Glastonbury and back through the markets there at my favourite coffee stand. And there was some guys there, must have been in their late 20s, and they were, like the rest of us, in shock. And they said to me, what are we going to do, Bill? And I said, we? Because this is something that's not going to happen to me. It's not going to be my possibility to go to Europe that's disappearing, my opportunity to work in Europe, my future that's being rolled over here. It's a younger generation. It's their future. They're going to be the first generation in my country to grow up poorer than their parents. So it's been a few difficult years that we've all lived through, but I think the time has come to hear from that generation, and that's why I'm here today. I'm here to kick ass and take names. And fortunately, most of you are wearing your names on the front of your shirts, mate, so don't give me no lip, all right? But I want to say something straight out the bat. In my experience, music cannot change the world. The only people in the wonderful exchange of ideas that we engage in as artists, the only people with the power to change the world are the audience, not us. Let's not take it upon ourselves and feel failures if we haven't brought down capitalism by the end of the weekend. It doesn't work like that. But we know, having said that, we know that music has an incredible power because we have ourselves been moved by it. but it's intangible. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the concept of intangible cultural heritage. Has this made any connections here, United States of America? It's a UNESCO program where they talk about things that aren't, you know, made of brick and stuff like that. I'll give you briefly the UNESCO definition of intangible cultural heritage, because I think it applies to all of us in this room. Intangible cultural heritage means the practices, representations, expressions, knowledge, skills, as well as the instruments, objects, artifacts, and cultural spaces associated therewith that communities, groups, and in some cases, individuals recognize as part of their cultural heritage. This intangible cultural heritage, transmitted from generation to generation, is constantly recreated by communities and groups in response to their environment, their interaction with nature, and their history. And it provides them with a sense of identity and continuity, thus promoting respect for cultural diversity and human creativity. I would argue that's also the definition of folk music and why all of us are here this weekend. But despite that intangibility, I'm going to talk just briefly from my own personal experience that I can tell you as fact as how music has effect on my life. The first political activism I ever got engaged with was Rock Against Racism. In Britain in 1978, I was a little snotty punk rocker and a different form of folk music, just faster and with fewer harmonies. And but better drugs, and allegedly. The Clash were playing, they were my band, they were a political band, they were a huge inspiration to me. So, and also, I was a active opponent of the National Front, a right-wing, anti-immigrant, racist party that came third in the general Greater London elections for the councils. They were a genuine threat on the streets. And so we marched through the streets of London to Victoria Park in Hackney. And the Clash were added late to the bill. The guy top of the bill that day was a guy named Tom Robinson. And he had a great song at the time called Sing If You're Glad to Be Gay. And today, that sounds like a great idea. Back then, being gay, you could get your head kicked in just for the possibility that you might be gay. It was an incredibly brave song to sing. And when he began singing that song that day, all these geezers standing around, me and my little gang of mates, started kissing each other on the lips. Now, I was a 19-year-old working class lad. I had never met an out gay man. And I was taken aback by this. We'd marched in underneath, just in front of a banner that said "Gays Against the Nazis," and we were still standing under it. We hadn't kind of noticed it. And my first thought was like, "Why are these gays here? This is about black people, surely, you know. What's it got to do with them?" I'm like, you know. It didn't take very long that afternoon for the penny to drop to realise that the fascists were against anybody who was in any way different. Even us little punks, they were against us just for being different. And I came away that afternoon understanding that my generation were going to define themselves in opposition to discrimination of all kinds, just as the previous generation had defined itself in opposition to Vietnam and the generation before that against nuclear weapons in my country, you know? And it was very, very important to me. At the time, I was working in an office. The atmosphere in the office, there was a lot of casual racism, sexism, homophobia. I never said anything about it because I was like the office junior. I just sat there and kind of let it bounce around and try not to be embarrassed. But after that day in the park, I realized that I really should start standing up because that's what my generation were going to do. We were going to be that generation. And so when I went back into work Monday morning, I started to stand up for what I believed in. And the music and that day had changed my perspective. It had changed my perspective on the political situation, on my situation, on my work situation. The world was still the same, you know, the train still ran, my mum still made liver and bacon on Sunday night when I come home from the event, but really my world had gone through a considerable change. And a few years later, I was involved with a miners' strike in England in 1984. I was playing solo by then. I was a solo, spiky, one-man clash kind of guy. Tray radical. And because I was mobile, I was able to go up north into the coal fields themselves and do gigs actually in the mining villages where the confrontations were happening. And the first one I did, I went up there and there was a very old guy by the name of Jock Purden. He'd been a miner. And he was a songwriter. And he sat on stage with his finger in his ear. He was opening for me. And his songs were more radical than anything I had in my bag. And I sat watching him and I thought, God, how am I going to follow this? Really show me up here. He came off stage in the dressing room. We talked about some of his songs and he talked about the struggle, the minor struggle. He talked about anti-racism. He talked about friends of his who'd gone off and volunteered for the Spanish Civil War. And he made it absolutely explicit to me that by coming and doing this gig for the miners, I was joining that tradition. No matter what song I was going to play up there, no matter what type of guitar I was playing, no matter what genre I thought I was now joining that tradition. He made me realize that I was joining that tradition. Years later, I was at the Vancouver Folk Festival with Pete Seeger. I rather foolishly volunteered to take part in a Woody Guthrie workshop, thinking to myself, I know a couple of Woody Guthrie songs, I'll be easy. How hard can it be? When I got there, the other three participants in the workshop were Pete Seeger, Arlo Guthrie, and Ramblin' Jack Elliott. Yeah, I managed to get away with it until it came to singing This Land Is Your Land. Pete sang a verse, Arlo sang a verse, Jack sang a verse. It was getting closer and closer to me like a missile. I'm like, sorry guys, we don't sing this in... But, you know, I got away with that. But later, Pete Seeger, Pete came to see me and he said, I want you to come up on stage with me and at the end of the show, we're going to sing it, the Internationale for the students in Tiananmen Square. It had just gone down. I'm sitting in the chow tent and Pete's saying to me, come. And I said to him, Pete, Bruce Coburn is going to sing the Canadian version. Someone's going to sing the Australian version. Someone else is, anyway, he wanted me to sing the British version. I'm like, Pete, the lyrics are just so archaic, you know. Arise, ye starvelings, from your slumbers. Arise, ye criminals of want, for reason in revolt now thunders, and here ends the age of cant. I said, Pete, they don't even scan properly. Can't I sing a verse of the American? He said, I'll tell you what to do. He said, why don't you write a new verse? And in folk music, you youngsters, there's some people you can't tell to F off. And old Pete was one of them. And even if I was going to tempt it, before I had time to form the words, he picked up a flyer off the table, found a pencil, closed his eyes, and began singing under his breath the original French lyric and writing me a phonetic translation to take away for homework. So I took it away and I wrote a verse and we sang it that night and it was okay. And I got to thinking, you know what? This is like 1990. The Berlin Wall come down, the Soviet Union disintegrated, our whole tradition was going in the dumpster and nobody seemed to be worried about the things that were really important to us that we were going to need further on our journey. So in the end, I wrote a few more verses and I recorded it. And now, if you look in the little red songbook, my version is next to the bloody original version in the songbook. Now that's better than having a hamburger named after you. So Pete knew what he was doing. Pete recognized where we were. Pete understood what was happening. He was passing it on, just like Jock. And another person who was passing it on was Nora Guthrie, who 20 years ago got in touch with me to ask me to write some music to some of her father's lyrics. And I got together with Wilco and we made the Mermaid Avenue records. And thank you. And through working with Woody, I came to an amazing conclusion looking at the lyrics. You know, Woody famously said that, I hate a song that makes you think you're bound to lose. You know, the only song he ever wrote with the words bound to lose in was All You Fascists Bound to Lose. And I learned from working with the songs that the true enemy of all of us who want to make the world a better place is not capitalism or conservatism, but cynicism. That is our greatest enemy. And not the cynicism of the right-wing newspapers. It's their job to drip cynicism into the national discourse. The cynicism that is the greatest enemy of those of us who want to make the world a better place is our own sense of cynicism, our own feeling that nothing will ever change, our own fear that no one else cares about this stuff, our own sense that all politicians are the same and they're all in it for the same things. You know, Rupert Murdoch wants you to believe that. He wants you to believe that. He makes a goddamn living trying to make you believe that so he can get away with that he wants to in your country, in my country, and country else around the world. And we live through a time of great cynicism. The internet is like a sewer of cynicism, you know? And it's had a detrimental effect on our work, you know, on our work. Because when I was 19 years old, if I wanted to say something about the world, there was only one social medium available to me. I had to learn to play guitar, write songs, and do gigs. There was no other way I was going to get my voice heard. And that's what I did, and millions of me, millions of others like me did in the 20th century. Now, you can write a blog, you can do a Facebook post, you can tweet, all you like. But trust me, no one is ever going to invite you to Kansas City to read out your bloody tweets. I wrote a song a few years ago about Murdoch's newspapers and The Sun, particularly The Sun newspaper in England, which is boycotted by people from Liverpool. We call them Scousers. Scousers never buy The Sun. I wrote it, took me 30 minutes to write. They play that song at Liverpool Football Club before the home games every week. Now, if I'd have written a Facebook post of 600 words, you think they'd have read that out before the home games? You know, this is what we're talking about. We have something really powerful here. But we have to fight against our own sense of cynicism and the cynicism that is abroad. And let me just say what I mean by cynicism. Not doubt. Doubt is the most human of all failings. Never trust anybody who has no doubts, because they're either a religious fanatic or trying to sell you a Trotskyite newspaper. And neither of them have any sense of humor, so keep away from them. I'm not talking about skepticism. You can learn. You can learn from a skeptic. Skepticism is healthy. Cynicism, to me, a cynic is someone who has given up, and they want you to give up as well because it makes them feel better about the failings that they've had in not being able to achieve the things they set out to do. I have no time for those people in my life anymore, you know? And that's not because I'm not a level-headed person. I simply recognize the glass is half full. If you can't recognize that the glass is half full, I really don't think you can be a socialist. I really don't think that. You've got to have that optimism. You've got to have that optimism. And what is socialism fundamentally in the 21st century? I believe that it's not worth the name socialism unless it is at heart a form of organized compassion. You know, and you... and that takes many, many expressions. In your country, it's the Affordable Care Act at the moment. I wish it was more than that, but that's all you've got. And fight for it. Because let me tell you, we have free healthcare in my country. We have to fight for it every inch of the way. We have to fight for it. You get that? They try and chip away at it all the time. You've got to fight against that and against the cynics. And the stigmatization of empathy in the last few years, to me, has been outrageous. The use of terms such as political correctness, and perhaps one of the worst ones, the phrase virtue signaling. Whenever you see that phrase, look at what's being said. Every time it's an expression of some kind of empathy for other people, some kind of understanding for other people. You know, we live in an age of antipathy. That's the driving force in our politics now, in your country, in my country, around the world, an antipathy and a sort of America First nationalism. You know, we have the same thing in the UKIP, United Kingdom Independence Party. A kind of, we don't care about anybody else, it's just us. You know, we have to define ourselves in opposition to that. all the time as much as we can, because we, if we deal in anything as artists, we must be promoting empathy. That's what music can do. It can't change the world, but it can make you feel things for people you've never met. It can make you understand the situation of people you've never read about in a song. It can touch you. A song can make you feel as if you're not alone. And that's absolutely crucial for the kind of music that we make. And the reason why the right despise empathy is because they fear it. They are literally, you can see Milo is afraid of feelings. They have to. Ultimately, you know, fascism is the denial of all feeling. So we, the people who express our feelings through music, we have to ramp that up. We have to make sure what we're saying is not cynical. We have to make sure what we're saying has empathy in it. Because empathy is one of the, and this is the reason why Rupert Murdoch hates empathy so much. Because empathy plus action equals solidarity. And if we're going to build that cohesive society, the bedrock of it is going to be social solidarity with people across the board, you know. And I know you have a chant in America, this is what democracy looks like. Well, unfortunately, in my country, democracy looks like Brexit. They won, and we're having to deal with that now. What I want to hear you saying is, this is what solidarity looks like. That's what the Women's March was. That's what Black Lives Matter is. That's what Obamacare is. That's what solidarity looks like. And we're here today in our tradition, the folk music tradition, folk as the repository of a collective memory of struggle and solidarity from years and years ago, in my lifetime, and other people in this room's lifetime before that, all the way back, beyond Jock Purden, beyond Woody, beyond Leadbelly. A great, great struggle. You know, we're, our tradition, the folk tradition, is about passing on that solidarity to a new generation. Each generation has to, you know, it's not the same. Joe Strummer said, every generation has to work it out to deal with the blues. But we're here to tell you, those of us with grey hair, I tell you that we have fought these battles before, and these are our experiences, and you need to build on what we've done. Music can't change the world, you know. The miners lost, despite what Jock and I did, but he passed that tradition on to me. The Clash didn't change the world. They didn't even give me the courage of my convictions. You know what gave me the courage of my convictions that day? Being in that audience. Seeing 100,000 kids just like me standing up against racism gave me the courage and my convictions to go back to work on Monday morning and stand up for what I bloody well believed in. And that's what we can do. That's the ability that we have. That's what music can do. It can make you feel that you're not alone. When you stand there together in the crowd, you're like a lightning rod. We don't have agency. Music doesn't have agency. But we do have the ability to charge people up, to reflect back their feelings on them, to make them feel they're part of something bigger, and to take away those ideas and ultimately act on it. We're like a signpost. We're like a lightning rod. And that's what we need from a new generation of songwriters that are coming for us. I spoke to a lot of people in the last few days in the lifts on the stairs who have been fired up to come here. Young songwriters who are writing political songs. People giving me CDs. And so that's the message I want you to take away from here. From what you've seen today. From being part of this great tradition that we have of solidarity. We want you to go away. We want you to learn the old songs. We want you to write some goddamn new lyrics for them. We want you to find a soapbox and get out there and do Woody's work. Thank you. From the Union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run. There shall be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. For what force on earth is weaker than the feeble force of one? For the Union Zion makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong. Death to cynicism!
And that concludes Billy Bragg's keynote speech delivered before the Folk Alliance International Conference on February 18th, 2017 at the Westin Crown Center in Kansas City, Missouri. There was no Q&A, so when we come back from break, we'll bring you a bunch of interesting odds and sods, as Billy might say, that we otherwise might not get onto the airwaves.
Billy Bragg.
Hi, this is Billy Bragg, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFF, Kansas City Community Radio. Wake up! Hi, this is Billy Bragg, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, although it looks like an F on this bit of paper. Kansas City Community Radio. Wake up!
Great.